and laughter and coffee with Renee Bernard, women's fiction, romance, and laughter.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Canned Laughter and Coffee. I'm Renee Bernard. Actually, I could be anybody. I could just say that. I mean, how does anybody? It's like I have to prove it. That just cracks me up. Anyway, I am Renee Bernard, and on the show tonight, I would have to say, I know I usually say, oh, my favorite person, but no lie. You're in, like, my top five. Top five.
Oh, I'm honored.
That's so true. So it's Patricia. No, true. Top five. Patricia Walters. Fisher is on the show because, you know, I love people with hyphens in their names. You know, I get excited.
Yeah.
So,
well, I decided not to have the hyphens name for the book because it would take up, like, the bottom whole half of the book.
I hear you. It just becomes
and
a
monolith. And see, if I just go by my married last name, I'm closer to you on the, I'm closer to you on the bookshelf. See?
Oh, that's
see?
So sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's Fisher, F-I-S. C-H-E-R, people. If you like share, keep that in mind. There you go. Patricia Wall Fisher. There you go. So it's Patricia WFisher.com.
Yeah,
there.
That's me.
I said it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's my plug. Okay, see you later. Bye.
Well, that lets people pop over, and now they come look at Deep in My Heart and Waiting for Mr.
Right.
Wright and all that good stuff while we're talking.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Which is a dangerous thing when you and I talk because we just go. We just go.
We do. And when Chocolatinis are involved, it's very dangerous. So
you know what? We've never had – that was in Los Angeles.
It was.
And I've never had good chocolate martinis since. At other RTs, I have tried. But Kansas was a disaster. Apparently, they did not know what that was. And ouch. Okay?
Yeah.
It was like, wow, chocolate chalk in a thing with the – and I was just like, no. So it must be a Los Angeles drink.
Possibly. Very possibly.
Have you duplicated it anywhere? Have you?
I actually haven't had any because I only have them when I'm hanging out with my writer friends, like at RT.
Okay. And so what are you saying? You don't drink. I'm an evil influence. And
oh God, no.
Okay. Thank you.
I just drink other things.
Not the big frou-frou, not the giant. Normally I wouldn't, but when I had that, it was like, oh, I think I may have found my little nexus of pleasure here. It's chocolate.
I did find out at RWA,
I
did find out at RWA in Atlanta that two Cosmos are my friend, three are not. So I will. I might just use that in a book. Actually, my friend Gina Maxwell actually said you have got to put that in a book. And I said,
"Okay, that is a quotable quote. Yeah, two.
It is a quotable
quote. Okay, three.
Not
apparently,
so much.
It's a betrayal of the friendship. It's over.
You have to call it quits on that one.
All the good feelings gone. Yeah,
gone.
That's flushed away. Brutal.
Yeah.
That's a brutal, fleeting friendship right there. Is what that is.
And you would think by the time I'm in my 40s and I'm thinking, I know how much I can drink. It's like, apparently not. So.
Well, it's a moving target, I found out. Apparently, if you set your count in your youth, you're like, okay, this is how many I can handle. Woo!
Right.
Yeah, that never drops when you're not looking behind your back.
Yeah.
And then you go out and you think, okay, here's my target number. No, you should divide it in half. And even then, you should proceed with caution because,
And make sure you eat a lot of starch at dinner.
Yes.
Before, yeah.
Because a conference is not where you want to be learning that lesson, just saying.
No, and especially not in front of, say, an agent or editor that you've been so desperately trying to impress.
That
would be bad. So.
Yes. And I can feel it when I'm like, okay, I'm funny. But now I think I'm funnier than – it's like you just hit that little wave of, oh, wow, I'm peaking. And then you look and you're like, I've had one drink, and I'm cresting. This is not a good sign.
Yeah.
So
let's stop now.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. What was it? What Hemingway said, write drunk, edit sober. But I don't know if Hemingway was ever sober. So maybe he was just less drunk.
Did he edit? I don't think he edited his own stuff. Maybe
he may not have, you know. He may not have.
So
I'm not
that,
sure.
Make sure your editor doesn't drink so you can, or I don't know. I'm never productive on alcohol, I found out.
I think I am.
I think I have great ideas. I sit down and I'm squirrel. I mean, you're just like so easily distracted and,
Yeah, well, I have enough of that without alcohol. So, I really don't need that to add to it if I'm trying to be productive.
No.
Right.
But it's funny. I don't really miss the days when I could imbibe more and pay for it less. But sometimes I secretly don't like the, you know, it's like, wow, I had it good and I had no idea. No idea.
Sure. Well, I think that's kind of the joy of it. You know, I think if I had started writing romance 20 years ago, it'd be so angsty. And it really would. It'd be very much I think it would be
YA.
Like those bad episodes of Sex and the City. You know, where you're just going, why are you pining over him? You know, I mean, what are you doing?
I so wanted to have, I mean, I kept thinking, that thing needs a spoof of, like, real women, like, right behind it instead of these glamorous women spending $800 on shoes and wondering about themselves. It needs to be followed up very quickly by, like, the real women in the city, you know? Like,
Buy normal white bras and granny panties and, you know, because they all match and you don't have to worry about it later.
But it's comfortable and who cares? It's right? It's like, unless I'm in a car accident, I really don't think anything's coming off here. Mm.
Yeah. Well, so. I mean, that was one of the, like, my new book is deep in my heart and it's the first of a new series I'm writing. The first book is actually a suspense and then the rest look like they're panning out to be just a contemporary romance. Of course, with twists. I mean, you want to do something unexpected when you're writing. But I made the character in her 30s, so she has a little bit of a head on her shoulders, you know, of normalcy. But I do have an episode where she's so glad that she, you know, actually shaved her legs that day. You know, I mean, it's one of those moments of, oh, thank God, I, you know, had that laser hair removal, you know?
Yeah.
I'm ready, you know. And
I'm good to go.
I'm good to go, you know. So but I mean, I put a little bit more practicality into it. I've read romances since I was in college. The first one I read was Whitney, My Love by Judith McNaught, and then totally fell in love with them and then waited anxiously for every one of her books to come out. And then I also found Jude Devereaux. Read her stuff and actually got to meet her this last time at RWA. When I saw she was speaking, I circled the day, I set my alarm, everything, and hovered outside the room until she spoke, you know, and then the room cleared for the previous lecture, and then I went in and sat, like, front, like, in the front right there, you know.
Oh,
so
it's a rock star thing. It's a rock star thing, that moment of total. No, poor Laura Kinsale, I think I just about passed out when I met her. I didn't stalk her. That would be a stupid thing to admit publicly. But the adoration
like that.
Is bone deep. So I was just basking in the glow.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun because it's not just the fact that you're standing in front of someone who is doing something that you hope to do at that same magnitude. But it's someone who's really just kind of put their heart out there and made
Although
it work.
Nobody in those books seems to worry about waxing their legs or whether they were shaved or not or anything.
You know what? They
other
never have to. Yeah. No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. But, you know, I like the way my characters are flawed. I try to make flawed characters.
Flawed is the right word. I
real.
Like the way that your characters are real. And
yeah.
they're grounded. And I think that it's so much easier to identify sometimes, especially in a contemporary, with someone that, I don't know, it's just such a great, fun, honest voice that you give your women, and I really like that.
Well, and the other, I'm writing with the Tuscany, Texas series. It's set in this fictitious town of Tuscany, Texas, and I live in the on the edge of the hill country in Texas, and it's basically a combination of these wonderful, lovely towns, and it's fun to find these characters and put them in there because, you know, everyone's got the town gossip and the town, you know, this and the person who's lived there forever and the family, you know, and you've got that, but it works because everyone's got their strengths and weaknesses. And the way I have people tied in is there's two. There's a foster home in the town, and I'm writing a separate series that the hero, the heroine will have been at that foster home, whether it's set in Tuscany all the time, I don't know, but and it's a good place. You know, it's not one of those orphan, you know, Oliver Twist situations. But it's a place where they really...
Well, right in the Victorian era, it's pretty much a requirement for it to
or had to read it, or
good.
Was in the play, yeah.
Yeah, it's
as
very
a child.
Rare for it to be good, you know, because some people are like, what? So,
I wanted,
I apologize.
I wanted to bring them in through that or through... Tuscany has an education trust, so people come back after... you know, the town spends money for you to go to med school or whatever, and then you come back. But I also have military aspect. Yeah, I have a military aspect, too, because the town, you know, the founding families are, all of them have, several of them have served in the military, because I wanted to give that respect there, you know, that this isn't just something that we say, oh, World War II, you know, rock on. I mean, these people are, you know, they're every day, you know, away from their families for a long time, And some people say, well, that's the job they signed up for. It's like, it's true, but it doesn't make it any easier.
No. I will, and a little shout out, but my niece, her husband is in the military and serving, he was serving on a tour, and you have your first baby, and he's, you know, he's not there.
Yeah.
So he just came home.
And it's hard for all the people. I mean, it's not
it
just
is.
The person leaving, but it's the whole family that serves.
No,
and I've walked up to, anytime I see anybody, we live in San Antonio, so there's three military bases here, and so I see military all the time, and every time I see them, and I've, you know, if I've done anything right with my kids, anytime we see military, even firemen, you know, police officers, we walk up and say, thank you for serving, because it's just one of those things that you, they're doing a job that not a lot of people want to do. I mean, I was a nurse, and, you know, and people go, oh, God, how could you work in the pediatric ER? I'm like, well, it's just what I did. And people said, thank you, but I don't walk around in my scrubs with, you know, baby nurse across my chest, you know.
That's, you know, that would be awkward.
That's creepy. Yeah, it would be very awkward considering I retired some time ago. But that is, I think, is just a respect.
Are scrubs like the most comfortable clothes ever? Because there are some people that seem to live in them. Just tell me right now.
Yes,
comfortable?
They are.
Not comfortable.
Yes, but they offer you no compliments on your figure at all.
That's
I mean,
true.
I don't care what your shape.
It's baggy
there's
pajamas.
No compliment.
And no offense, but some of you guys, those patterns, no, it's not.
I did like wearing the cartoon scrubs, though. There's just the tops. I would never, you know, I just have like a solid, you know, solid pants.
Okay.
But,
I'm sorry. I know it was off topic, but I had to ask because.
Yeah. No, it's fine.
I live in them, and I look at it, and I'm like, are those pajamas? They just look as comfy as pajamas. So I'm not really
they do.
Sure what's
they
going
can
on
be.
Over there.
I think the most ridiculous one is white scrubs. It's like, do you know what I do for a living?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, terrible. So, yeah, so that's the scoop.
Oh, my God. I hate to break it to you, but we blew it. That was it. That was the show.
No!
I know. So we're wrapping it up here, people, but it's deep in my heart, and it's Patricia Fisher, and run out there, and I'm still waiting for Mr. Wright.
And I'm writing Sam's book now, so it's almost done.
So everybody, please, if you're looking for a really fun read, and who doesn't love cowboys, who doesn't love Texas, who doesn't love, there's a million reasons to love Patricia Fisher, but I can't list them all because I've only got, 50 seconds left, so this is just brutal. It's brutal! But thank you so much for being on the show, and thank your kids for being so fabulously quiet and wonderful.
I know. I had them. It's impressive, actually. One was starting to play the piano, but yes. So that was fun.
Yes, I'm thrilled. So, all right, everybody. Good night. Thank you for joining me for Canned Laughter and Coffee. And hey, everybody who's listening, we will see you next Tuesday for more. And this lady, you owe me a drink. You just still owe me.
I
you
do.
Owe me so many drinks.
I do.
And now I'm over
very
my
many.
Limit. What am I going to do? All right. Good night, everybody. I'll see you soon.
Have a good night.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.